scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it looks corner to Aguilla. Aguilla left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aguilla, rebound, double shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
And the sea of red erupts!
Flames Talk starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
Well, we have got a rare treat as we get this hour underway. It is Friday, November 1st. Welcome to November. Welcome to this hour of Flames Talk. Welcome to the Scotiabank Saddledome. And welcome to the Eric Francis Hour, brought to you by Horse Racing Alberta. Live thoroughbred racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18 plus. Please play responsibly. And our special treat is I get to look right in the pearly blue eyes of Eric Francis on the Eric Francis Hour today. This is a very exciting day for me.
All right. Everybody slow down. How are you, bud?
I'm good, man. People are lined up out the door to come.
There's people, yeah. And now you guys have installed cameras.
Shh. Oh, no. Don't really care. We have installed cameras in here. I just don't know when they're going to be working or when it's going to be operational. But yeah, look, it looks like a professional broom closet in here now. Hey?
And I love that you just asked our producer, how do you turn them on? And he said, just say, hey Siri, turn cameras on. And you're not really sure whether to believe them or not. I still think that they're a clap on, clap off. That's my vintage.
They look like spaceships.
Yeah, little R2-D2s watching us right
little,
now.
Little mini R2-D2s. Yeah. Now I can't have my typical normal fun in here.
Yeah, you can't sit here with your shirt off. It's weird. It feels weird with you fully. Yeah, anyway, it's all good.
Hey, tarps off.
Tarps off. That's Tuesday. That'll be a thing.
That's how we do the post-game show always.
Yeah.
Hey, we got some Friday night hockey at the Dome, and it's Jacob Markstrom's return to the Scotiabank Saddledome. And maybe we spend a little bit of time on this. Maybe we don't, because I know you sure did like the way that head coach Ryan Huska went about addressing Jacob Markstrom's return. This was head coach Ryan Huska Friday morning when he was maybe asked a little bit about Jacob coming back here to the Dome.
Can you just say something about what Jacob meant to this organization during his tenure here?
That's over and done with for us, so we're just focusing on our team game tonight.
You love that response, eh? Like, that's behind us. We're not talking about Jacob. We got a game to play against the Devils tonight. Have a nice day. It was essentially the paraphrase from the head coach today.
Old news. And, you know, in this league, you know, whenever someone comes back to a market, everyone understands. It's a story. People are talking about it. People are thinking about it. The question has to be asked. But you don't have to do what everybody else does all over the league, which is, you know, rain praise upon him and speak highly of all the things he did on and off the ice. And, hey, I'm not saying they're not legit. It's just that he's gone. People are far more excited right now to have Dustin Wolf in the net. And he had one foot out the door anyway. He was a guy who didn't want to be here. Conroy ripped the Band-Aid off, got rid of him, and basically completed a heavy load of work last year to kind of transition this team from a team of guys who had one foot out the door all season long to a team of 23 guys, as he's been saying all along, that all want to be here.
Right.
That can change. I'm not saying that at the trade deadline all 23 are going to want to be here, but right now all 23 want to be here. And that's the way it should be in a market. You know, you should be thrilled to be here. You should be feeling privileged to play in a market like Calgary where it matters. I love that he didn't get all misty-eyed and speak of all the virtues of Jacob Markstrom. Dude wanted out. Dude didn't love it here. Dude, I'll try to just take the same road that he did and say, he's old news, let's move on.
Yep. And fair enough. It was neat to see Markstrom, Wolf, Vladar, and LaBarbera, kind of the goaltending mafia from last year, all kind of reconvene. Jacob came out onto the visitor's bench and said hi to Barbs, and then the two other goalies, Wolf and Vladar, came on the ice, and they had a cool little conference there and talked for about 10 minutes before morning skate, which was pretty cool. But
you had the scoop on that, too, by the way. That photo that you took –
I broke the news.
You broke that story that those guys are all friends. That's good for you, bud. That was a great photo.
That's my news breaking right there.
And that's what happens when you get to the Dome 2 hours before they practice every day. You get those odd, real salty scoops.
It wasn't 2 hours. It was 9:55 for a 10:30.
Yeah, you get here pretty early. I like it.
I do. I like my solitary time before the TSN guy comes and ruins it. I like just sitting there by myself, and then
you get crowded.
And then Solemn comes over and sits, and I'm always like, "Can you give me one more seat?" Like he's
18,000 seats,
and he sits. He used to sit right beside me, like not even one buffer. And I was like, "Okay, we need to talk about this. We can give a buffer. Like there's nobody else that's sitting here."
Yeah. So it's kind of cute to see you two every day. I walk in, you're right there, and but you know, to the point that you come in here early, like you're regimented, kind of like how, you know, Backlund is. And you know, Coleman had that line today about how he gets up every day at 6, has his cup of coffee, and then walks his imaginary dog at 7 o'clock. That's kind of like good. You walk your imaginary dog.
I am a creature of habit.
You
there's
are
no true there's no lie about that. Like I get very anxious and frustrated if my routine gets messed with. I am quite regimented. I've had to learn, as I've become an elderly person in my 40s now, I've had to learn that, you know, you don't need to have the routine the same every single day. if it does get messed with a little bit, you don't need to. You know who taught, like Labardius taught me that. Labardius was a big reason why I am no longer as much of a slave to the routine as I used to be, because, oh my goodness, I would tie myself in knots to try to do the same thing every single day. Yeah. So I'm a more well-rounded person now.
Oh, we've all said that around here for sure. There's no question about it. That's the talk. That's the buzz around the Dome.
Not the Flames off to a good start, but how much more well-rounded about, I am.
Yeah. But you know, the Flames are going back to Markstrom, the Flames are going to do the classy thing and recognize him today.
As they should.
Of course, as they should. And, you know, now correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the guru of all stats. Is he not the fifth winningest goalie in the history of the Flames organization?
Yes, I believe that is
unbelievable. Think about that.
Four seasons
feels like a blip on the radar, and he's the fifth winningest. It speaks to just how what's the word I'll use? How challenged this organization has been in between the pipes throughout its history, save for two guys.
Yep.
Two good goaltenders.
They're the ones
history
who have
of
their
this franchise.
The ones who have their numbers hanging in the rafters.
That's right.
Yeah.
The rest has just been a rotating door of average, sometimes above average, oftentimes below average good net mining.
Do you want to take a stab? Do you know the four who are in front of them?
Like, I think Lemelin, isn't he in there?
Yep.
Three? Is he three?
Reggie Lemelin, four.
Four.
Obviously, Mika's one. And Vernon's two. So who's three?
Reggie Lemelin. And then, I haven't looked at it for a long time, and my memory's terrible, but is it Trevor Kidd?
No, it is Dan Bouchard.
Bouchard,
of course, who started in
Atlanta.
And then I think only played one or two seasons once they got to Calgary.
So they count as Atlanta stats.
Yeah, they do count as Atlanta stats. Okay. In Calgary, you know, it would probably be Markstrom would be probably three, maybe four, if you only counted time in Calgary, because Reggie had a little bit of time in Atlanta as well. So
4 years.
Yeah.
But, I mean, he was quite durable. He was a workhorse, and he was very good. I mean, the 1 year there, he was a Vezina finalist. So I don't mean to throw shade on him other than to say there's no reason to sit here and get all misty-eyed over what was, because it didn't end well. It really didn't.
No, it did not.
People can sugarcoat it all they want.
The last season, the comment, you know, right around the trade deadline when a deal didn't happen to the team that he's with now, then the comment afterwards, it was you who asked him about it.
On Mika Kiprusoff's day.
That's right. Was it Kiprusoff's retirement
night?
It was
his retirement night. It was a Friday night, and he couldn't wait to say something negative about management and the way he thought this thing was being handled. and decided that was the time to do it. I asked a very innocent question that he could have easily deflected.
That's right. Didn't you, if I remember correctly, didn't you just ask, like, hey, now that the deadline's passed and you know you're here, does that just, like, kind of put it to bed for
yes.
the time being? I think that's basically what you asked.
Yeah, and he wanted to take one last swing. And again, whatever. Hey, we love it when guys speak their mind, okay? And I'm not – that's – just the timing was unfortunate. And I did hear him do an interview this summer where he did kind of speak to that and say – that was unfortunate that it was Mika Kiprusoff's night because
yeah.
people around the league know recognize that that happened.
I didn't even think of that.
Oh, I did at the time. I thought, yeah, I don't like that. Look.
I'm sure I did at the time realize that it was also, but I just that did not register that. It was
I remembered something
night.
That you didn't.
Yeah.
Wow.
Congratulations.
Two old guys arguing over.
Do you want to talk
how
about
bad their memory?
Do you
is.
Want to talk about expected goals?
Wes, yes, by
Wes
the way,
in the room
I
here.
Came into the room right after. There's Wes Gilbertson in the background, and I'm on Team Wes on this one. That is a dumb stat. That is just a dumb stat, and Wes, who's not often good with his words, he actually cobbled together quite a coherent sentence about the fact that if you're talking about expected goals, it means you're not living up to expectations, and you're just – not getting them.
As I said to Wes, not always like that. There are plenty of times.
I know.
When...
We don't need to hear your argument again. We're not coming back to this, Your Honor.
I'd like to thank you for recognizing my stature and calling me Your Honor, at least. That's very...
Here's another one I want to kind
of rank.
You
in, I find you in contempt.
Yeah. Many people do. It's okay. I tried... As an old man, I try every once in a while to get into an analytic.
Yeah.
And so I pick one every once in a while and go, okay, I'm going to look at this one a little more, try to understand what it means, what it is, why you would use it. And the one I went to the well on several times was high danger scoring chances,
yep.
that natural stat trick.
Yep.
But I've gone to look at it far too many times. As an example, last game when they lost 5-1 and were badly outplayed all game long pretty much. I went to go look at expected goals, or not expected goals.
High dangers.
High dangers.
Yeah.
Calgary Flames had more high danger chances than the host team in Utah, and Utah was leading 4-0. Utah had two high danger chances. Help me with the math on that. If it goes in, I know that every time a puck goes in, it's not a high danger chance, but come on, you're down 4-0 and you're...
So the way that
go ahead,
the Your way Honor. The way you're let me just
and Cord. It's Ryan Pike who keeps those stats for the whole league, isn't it?
Court is in session.
He decides.
Yes, Pike.
He sits there and goes, "Yay, nay."
Pike
high
watches
danger, no
every
danger.
Game. Here's how Natural Stat Trick does their high dangers. They just scrub it right from the NHL's website.
Yeah.
So the NHL
if it's in a zone.
Yeah. So the NHL does where the shot locations are, right? And if it is in their little house area from the just outside the two circles in towards the crease, that little kind of triangle, if a shot comes from in there, an attempt comes from in there, it's a high danger.
Okay.
If a shot comes from a little outside of there in another zone, it is a medium danger or just what they call a scoring chance. Oh. And then everything else is just a shot attempt. That's how they come up with their scoring chances.
There's no such thing as medium danger.
Well,
that's not a column that I've seen in any stat.
They just call them scoring chance.
Okay.
I call them medium right, danger.
Okay, let's move on.
The whole high danger conversation, it actually paints a really interesting picture on how well a goaltender is playing or what type of impact a goaltender is having on a game. Because similar to that one, I don't know, you know, I haven't gone and actually looked at the game tape or anything like that, but sometimes there will be a game where team's winning 5-0, there haven't been a lot of high dangers, and it kind of tells you the goalie's not having a very good night.
Okay.
And that's kind of another way that you can apply those things.
Fair enough. So in that vein, another time I decided to look at high danger saves or expected high danger. Jacob Markstrom last year led the league by quite a lot
for a while
in terms.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until the end, until in what high danger
save percentage.
Yeah. That's a good stat to me. That means a guy's just, and that's the number one reason why when we were doing our preseason predictions, I was thinking that the Calgary Flames, you know, like everybody, was thinking this could be a tough year because you're asking two goalies to not only shoulder the load that they've never shouldered before, but also this is a team that's traditionally, well, last year anyway, gave up an inordinate amount of high-danger scoring chances.
Right.
That combination to me could have been deadly. it hasn't turned out that way, and both goalies have been great. Do you want to sit here and talk about who's had a better season this year, the Flames goaltenders collectively or Jacob Markstrom? Because I think collectively, Calgary Flames numbers are pretty similar to Jacob Markstrom.
Well, and up
so
until the last
year.
Up until the last couple games, it was actually even more better. Slanted Calgary's way. Mm-hmm. Now, I do think you give Jacob a little bit of leeway because he is with a new team and learning, you know, some new tendencies and all that type of stuff. But definitely the way Calgary's two goaltenders have started out the year, it's been a giant positive story for him. I mean, Wolf's numbers were really strong. Vladar's numbers were getting better. They both allow 5 in their last 2 starts, which bring him down a little mm-hmm. bit. But, I mean, honestly, Markstrom or not, I think Calgary's goaltending has been one of the, I think you said it last week, that we're not giving anywhere near enough of the credit to this good start to Calgary's goaltenders yep. because they've been so good.
And I don't think anyone's going to blame those last 2 losses on them. Were they spectacular? No. But they weren't horrible. It wasn't on the goaltending at all, and I think Huska said that again today. Like, there's no way that you can pin any of I'm not saying anything. I might have to go through all 10 goals. Jeez, 10 goals. I'd have to go through all 10 to see which ones the goalie wished that he could have had back. I mean, they wish they could all have them back, but the ones that they feel they could have had back. And I don't know what the number would be, but it wouldn't be that high.
Yeah, it was – I mean, the one on Wednesday that – again, I didn't think it was a bad goal, but you're like, for the first time this season, I thought, geez, they could have really used a save there. And it was the Barrett Hayton goal with less than 2 seconds to go in the Utah
Killer.
Game. Yeah, it really
Killer.
Was. It was a 1-0 game. The Flames had played a pretty decent
yeah,
first period.
For a road game, yeah, they played a good
first And then period. That goes in, and all of a sudden you're chasing by 2 for the rest of the night. They get with – then there's 2 killers because then the goal 17 seconds after Mantha scored was another kick in the gut. But yeah. that one late with less than 2 seconds to go, we hear it all the time how deflating those goals can be, and that one definitely did feel deflating, hey?
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, I think – I agree. And that arena there really fed off it too. They're all newbies, you know, the new hockey fans in Utah. I love that building, by the way. There's some obstructed views up in the way, all 4 corners.
Yeah,
they don't sell tickets in the 4 corners because they can't see the opposing net, so you should sell them for half price. You see half the game, you know. But apparently do what they do on weekends for the big games, they sell those tickets. But great rink other than that. And it's hard to fathom. That's from 1991, that rink.
That's
and
how old Delta Center
that's
is,
That's how
hey?
Old it is. It is amazing, in amazingly good shape. And I said this on the broadcast the other day. I showed a video. There are, I'd say, the best 8 or 10 seats, maybe more, in the NHL are all in that rink. In all 4 corners, seats protrude right up to the glass, about 10 feet up, right where the glass starts to get high. I took a video of me reaching. You can reach over during the game if you wanted to onto the ice surface, and you're elevated up high. Oh, best seats I've
That's
ever
cool.
seen in the National Hockey League. Yep. Yeah.
I saw that video they showed on the telecast on Wednesday was
Oh, you could
neat.
See it. Yeah,
yeah.
Well, yeah.
I was like, that's pretty cool. Like, that's you don't see that in any other rink in
Very
the
unique.
NHL. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm not sure how safe it is, but
you know what?
Whatever, you pays your money, you takes your chances.
That's the next time Gary Bettman's on the show. We'll ask him about how safe it is. Okay, Eric Francis Hour, Francis Steinberg on this Friday. Okay, there's been a lot of, over the last little bit, there's been a lot of like, okay, told you so, this isn't going to be able to be sustainable. The bloom will come off the rose eventually. 5-0-1, yeah, that's great, but that's not what this team really is. Now they've lost 4 in a row. How much are you willing to buy into, okay, this 4-game losing skid is maybe a little bit more what the Flames actually are compared to that 5-0-1 start?
Yeah, you know, I'm not gonna be that guy who sits there and go, yeah, this is what they really are. No, I don't believe that. I think that when their work ethic is there, their work ethic disappeared the last 2 games. It is quite taxing for a team to go an entire season based largely on trying to be the hardest working team in the league. Mm-hmm. You know, that's kind of one of their credos. You can't do it. It's not possible for 82 games. And we just saw 2 games where they kind of did let their foot off the gas in terms of their tenacity, and that's what you get. So I think there's somewhere in between. It sounds pretty vanilla kind of an answer, but I think there's somewhere in the middle of where they've been the last 2 games and where they were at the beginning. You know, I still think that this year that they'll be able to, you know, really fight hard to be above 500. I think they can be. But I don't think it's going to be enough to get into the playoffs. So I, this hasn't changed my mind a little bit, but it does make everyone realize it's, you know, the beginning wasn't sustainable. For no team, it would have been.
Do you think this is one of these situations where, because, like you said, kind of being that hardest working team every single night, is that a scenario where you think that there will be nights where they just, like, they're out of gas because of how taxing this brand of hockey can be? Like, is that, and I'm not trying to make excuses for the last two nights, but is that a scenario where, hey, sometimes they'll just be out of gas, and when they don't work hard or when they don't have the energy to have that work ethic where it needs to be, there will be nights where the talent deficit will be just too much, kind of like what we saw. I thought especially in the final 40 minutes of the Vegas game that might have been the case.
Yeah, I mean, out of gas is an interesting term. I mean, here we are.
I know, it's only 10 games into the season. Like, I kick myself even for asking it. It's more going forward. I wonder how much of a factor that might be.
I know what you're saying, but I will say that I do think that they've proven already, and I think in past years proven that this is a team that doesn't give up. Now, the last two games, we did kind of see them lose the fight, especially late, you know, a meaningless third period when you're down by three or four. But, you know, we did see opening night that these guys don't give up. I think two of their first five wins were comebacks, if not three of them. So I don't think it means that every time they get off to a bad start or they, you know, midway through the game they're down by three, that it's going to be an avalanche. But to your point, you know, and it's not just, you know, out of gas. It's more just the tenacity, the in-your-face, the winning, the one-on-one battles. That's what they kept talking about after that game in Utah and in Vegas. Like, Ryan Hezka, you heard the comments, and, you know, we just said, like, our forwards were too easy to play against. Mm-hmm. You know, that can't happen with this team. They need to set the tone up front with a hard forecheck, and then, you know, and it kind of goes from there.
Yep. I am curious if there – because I think there will be nights where the Flames work hard, and they just get beat, right? Like, I think Carolina and Winnipeg are really good examples of that. You know, they hung tough against two really good teams.
They were good in both games. Yeah, I'm not going to – I don't lump the last two games in with the first two losses. Are you with me?
Absolutely. Yeah. But there will also be nights if they don't bring that where maybe the deficit is a whole lot more.
Sure.
And that was – you hope that it's a wake-up call for some of the group there that, hey, if a lot of the details and if you do skirt some of those things, you can get it rolled up on you pretty quickly.
And I don't think it's a case of them, you know, starting to believe their press clippings, because none of the players read any of the stuff that's
or listen or watch ever. No.
Exactly. But – I just think it was a case of just kind of almost forgetting what got you there. And it was in Vegas. Like, you know, I do know, you know, a bunch of the players, their wives or girlfriends came down because it's Vegas, right? And you spend the night, you know, enjoying the town. I'm not saying any of them went overboard. Today's professional athletes rarely do that anymore because they're, you know, many industries, each one of them. But
yep,
they pick their spots. And so I'm not suggesting it was the Vegas flu, but there are a lot of distractions, and things were going quite well for this team, and then they met up with a juggernaut who hasn't lost at home all year long.
Yep.
I mean, tough for anybody to win in Vegas.
So now the Flames get set to take on the New Jersey Devils. They host them Friday night. Before we take our first pause, and maybe one of the more interesting roster moves of the season was made this week. Sam Honzek, who was the story of training camp, played his first four NHL games before getting injured. He's now down in the American League with the Wranglers. Matt Coronato comes right back up. He was sent down exactly a week ago. Much consternation about that decision, but he's right back up with the team, and he's going to jump right onto the backline line with Coleman. Interesting to see. Honzek gets the one game back, and then he goes to the American League, and Coronato is the guy who gets recalled.
I think you would agree with me that none of this is a surprise. Would you agree with me? Like, I am not surprised Sam Honzek. I think a lot of people were because he made the team. He was so good in the preseason, may have been their best player. But by the end, you know, they gave him one more game after he came back from the injury.
Yep.
And it really, he was quite invisible. And I think at that point, they're like, look, we had pretty much predicted you were going to be in the AHL all season long. Why don't we send you back there? Go get your legs under you. Go get some confidence. And Coronado's, you know, a house on fire. So I think it makes all the sense in the world. I think you're going to see a lot of movement this year, up and down between the AHL and the Flames team. And what a wonderful luxury to have when you look at that list of guys with the Wranglers right now just lighting it up, including their goalie. Like,
yep.
Well, they won 9 in a row?
Yeah.
So, I mean,
9-1.
That's pretty incredible.
The idea of Coronado going onto the back of the line, I know you like that a lot. And Hanzek, like, a couple of things. I think Hanzek being as invisible as he was in his first game back and struggling the way that he did, because he did struggle, mixed with the fact that, hey, he got belted in that game against Chicago, and he was the one who initiated the contact. Like, that was not Connor Murphy going in and catching him off guard or a dirty hit or a charge. That was Connor Murphy with the puck just basically saying, get off me, to a guy who doesn't have that NHL man strength right now. And so I think Hanzek, when you mix that with the fact that maybe he struggled a little bit coming back, you're like, okay, maybe this is the right time for him to go to the American League, play the bigger minutes, and learn a little bit more about the physicality, learn a little bit more about the upkeep, all that type of stuff, and do it in an environment where there's a little less pressure and the opposition is a little less of the finest tuned human beings on the planet, right? It makes a lot of sense for so many different reasons.
And Coronado is deserving of being up with
absolutely.
The main club.
Absolutely.
When they demoted him, we talked about it. You know, we knew he was going down. We knew Klapka was going down. Neither one of them went down based on merit. I mean, they went down because it was a numbers game. Hanzek comes back, and he had to kind of almost re-earn his spot again. And I think they just, for all the things you said and what I'd said earlier, it makes sense to send him. Makes sense to send him down. I spoke to him the morning of his return, and I said, when you went to the bench after getting rocked by Connor Murphy, you slammed your stick against the glass. You were really mad. I said, were you mad because you allowed yourself to be prone, or were you mad because he got you? And he said both, 100%, like 50-50. Like I was mad that I wasn't quite ready for it. And that's almost symbolic of where he's at. I'm not sure he was ready for a lot of things that are coming into the NHL, because it all happened very fast. Now he can go down to the minors and be ready for a lot of things next time he comes up.
Well, and I hate to say this, but Wes Gilbertson made a really good point on Thursday. I know that bothers you.
Never heard of him.
But basically said, like, this was the original plan. Like, they
100%.
It was never supposed to be Hanzek in the NHL this year. Their plan was for him to go to the Wranglers as a 19, soon-to-be 20-year-old and play a ton. And that is now what he can do, just with a little bit of a detour before going down there.
And not a bad experience up here other than the hit and the injury. But that's exactly what I tweeted yesterday when Coronado went down. This was the plan all along. Coronado makes the team. Hanzek plays in the AHL. I love that they rewarded Hanzek for having the best camp. And that's the way they should have done it. All this has played out, I think, the way it should have. They really do.
Yep.
Ideally, Hanzek continues to light it up, doesn't get hurt, and stays in the lineup and is an NHLer for his first full year as a pro. That's a lot to ask, especially for a team that's not really – they're looking long-term, right? You don't want this guy to lose confidence. So I love the move.
Yep.
And that perch with Coleman and Backlund, I don't think there's a better perch on this team for a forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't think there's a better – you want to set guys up for success. I don't think you could pick two other guys that would be as good to be on with him. Kadri's line has been great, whoever he's kind of played with, but Kadri keeps the puck a lot. Kadri shoots the puck a lot. Backlund and Coleman are more about setups and sharing and working together. I just think that this is the ultimate way to kind of give this guy a chance. I'd love to see him have a long run on this line.
If you talk to the coaching staff, too, about the way that Coleman and Backlund isolate and the way that they allow room for their line mate, and the way they can get, like, the way that they isolate other players and the two-on-one downloads, all that type of stuff, you're like, geez, those two play so well off of one another, mm-hmm. and at the same time make life so easy on their third line mate that, yeah, I'm with you. I think for Matt, and he could – when I asked him in the locker room this morning about, hey, playing with those two guys, even his eyes lit up. He's like, I'm really excited. If you've ever talked to Matthew Tkachuk about playing with Michael Backlund,
oh, yeah.
Like, I know that everybody's like, yeah, well, Tkachuk would have been fine. He would have gotten to 100 points, which Matthew Tkachuk's one of the best players on the planet. He may very well have. But you talk to him even now, and especially then, about playing with Michael Backlund and just like how many different things he does on the ice and what that does for a line mate like Matthew. Like, people rave about playing with that guy, and I think Coleman is exactly the same way.
Keith Tkachuk, would never stop talking about Backlund and how lucky Matthew is to be playing with Backlund. You know, as I think about it, we really should do something to celebrate Michael Backlund. You know what I mean? If you could just come up with something, some reason to celebrate all the things that he does.
Well, like if
for
we could find like
a,
if we could find like a milestone or something like that to, yeah, to really
I don't know.
We should brainstorm on that.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was pretty. It was neat. We get the direct feedback here to the rink, and
yeah,
so you know, seeing everybody, we were, you know, the cameras had it focused on the locker room and seeing everybody getting ready and putting on the 11 jerseys and everybody going out in the 11s and seeing those backs shirts with the 1K and then seeing everybody warm up in the number 11 jerseys. It was pretty cool from afar. It must have been pretty neat being there in Utah and kind of being around the buzz of that special night on Wednesday.
It really was cool. The six best friends all sat one row in front of me in the arena.
Oh, nice.
They have the media table set up in the stands. And so every single shift that Michael Backlund had, those guys were chanting like it's the European Championship. And as soon as he'd go off the ice, they'd stop. But, you know, some of these shifts are, you know, a minute long. And the crowd, you'd start to see one by one people turning around like, are they going to keep doing this all game? Good on them. It's their best buddy. I chatted with those guys. They're so proud of their buddy. They say he's the best athlete they'd ever seen in every sport, soccer, you name it, growing up. But in warm-up, like if you saw Lomberg had his hat on backwards, like a ball cap on backwards.
Yep.
I think Kirkland did too. And it was just a very laid-back, relaxed. And I do think it probably hurt them because it was a distraction. But whatever. You got to do these things. And the way he was flipping pucks, he flipped one to all six of his best friends. And every time he'd skate by them, he'd kind of look up and smile. Like, he loved it. And you don't often see guys kind of let their guard down, even in warm-up. And he was just soaking it all in and loving every minute. It was cool. He deserves everything he's getting.
Francis Steinberg, it's the Eric Francis Hour. Eric Francis of Sportsnet and Sportsnet.ca. And the Eric Francis Hour brought to you, as always, by Horse Racing Alberta. Live thoroughbred racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.
Anything and everything Calgary Flames. It's all on Flames Talk. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
We are at the Hot Stove Lounge on this Friday. It's the Eric Francis Hour. Francis from Sportsnet.ca and Sportsnet Television. Pat Steinberg along with you on Flames Talk. And plenty still to get to on this week's EF Hour. The Eric Francis Hour for Horse Racing Alberta. Hey, the center ice position is still... They got to figure something out there at some point. And I don't know if it's going to be this year that they urgently need to do it or not. But the Martin Pospisil center ice experiment has been paused.
Paused. Now, that's a good word. It's not over.
I don't think it's over either.
But, yeah, I hear you.
Yegor Sharangovich is getting played down the middle right now. They haven't really used Connor Zary much at center ice this year. Like that continues to be a really, really difficult thing for them to nail down, hasn't it?
Isn't it funny that maybe a week and a half ago we were talking about, yeah, they need a center, but it's not pressing right now because Kirkland was playing well, and we knew Rooney was coming back, and Pospisil was doing quite well in the middle and all these things. And now a week and a half later, four losses later,
yep,
Sharangovich is not working out in the center. Listen, it's his first two games back. It's a tough enough thing for a guy to start your first two games of the year, you know, eight games into the season. But also then to have to do it in a position that you're not as familiar with and not as effective in, and that's been proven. So that is a hindrance. Listen, when I was talking this morning to a couple people about, you got that, we talked about the Coleman line, and I just think Coleman, Backlund, and whoever they play with is always going to be counted on as, I think, the most consistent, arguably the best line this franchise has had for years. The Tkachuk line was pretty good too, I know, but... you look at the other line, Kadri and the kids. We've seen last year how that can work like a charm. The big question mark is that line that Sharangovich is centering to me. It's the biggest issue on this team right now. The biggest issue of the last 2 years has been how to get Huberto going. There's also a secondary, I would say the second guy you're always trying to get going is Kuzmenko. You're putting them on the same line together, and you're going to put him with a center who is not a proven center.
Mm-hmm.
If that could work, it would be fantastic for this organization. I think it would really help the bottom line. But I'm not sure it's going to work. And so that is something that they're very concerned about and watching very closely moving forward. The fourth line has had a roving cast of characters, been fantastic almost every night for what they're asked to do. Other three lines, all good. That Huberto line has been a problem all year long. And Huberto's had a pretty good start, don't get me wrong. And Kuzmenko's shown flashes on the power play. But the big question with that line is, how engaged can we get them defensively?
Yeah.
That's the question.
Do you find it strange they haven't given Zarya a run down the middle yet?
I think that's coming. I don't know if I find it strange because I think they really wanted him to work on that line with Coleman and Backlund.
Which I think he was.
And I thought it was too. But again, everybody seems to work out with those guys. So it worked out, but you know, he hadn't really scored since game two, I think, or one.
Yeah.
Game two. Anyway, he's played well. He might not have the goals, but he's played well. I think that's coming. If we had a crystal ball in 3 years from now, I still think Connor Zeri is your second line center. Like, I really do. But it's just taken a while for them to kind of try to make that fix permanent.
I do. Like, they clearly love him on the wing, which you can understand
well, that too,
why.
Yeah, right.
Because he's been really good for him on the wing, and he drives a lot of offense for him there. But it's been interesting to me that they've used Sharon Govich, and they really wanted to try Pospisil, which I understand, but they haven't gone down the Zeri road as of yet. But you're right. It probably still could happen if the Sharon Govich thing they deem is not a success.
Yeah. I could see them, you know, if they struggled for the next week or so, I could see them finally giving up on the Sharon Govich experiment and going, okay, we got to try something else. Connor Zeri's next man up. Let's try him. Man, I think this organization was really hoping, against all odds, that Kirkland up in a top six role would work because he was a very skilled player as a junior. And, you know, they say now he's got more bite to his game. And if whatever momentum he was starting to build, if that could have worked, that would have been great, but it was kind of a one-and-done thing. And I think it's a little too much to expect a career minor leaguer to step in and play on the second line on a team that's trying to make the playoffs.
Yep.
So, yeah, I don't know. I don't think for a second that right now Conroy is feeling a little more heat to go get a center. I think he's felt that ever since they lost Lindholm. But we may get to a point where he feels a lot more pressure to get it done sooner rather than later.
Yeah, and I don't know, like, should he be pressured to do it this season?
I don't think so, and I bet you most fans don't. But most fans are not one foot in to try to make the playoffs while also building for the future. Most fans are like, let's just build for the future and forget about this year. But Conroy has his marching orders from ownership to do both. The high build, as I refer to it.
The high build, that's right.
The hybrid rebuild.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I do think that there are attainable guys they could go out and get. You don't want to be overpaying, right? Like, you don't want to have the urgency then make it so that you're paying too much to bring one of those guys in. And that would be the only worry I would have in making a deal like imminently here, you know? Because you want to make sure that you're still paying a price that makes sense for what you're trying to do big picture wise.
And you might have to wait a while because right now every team still thinks that they can make the playoffs. So, you know, you got to start to wait.
And I mean, if we're like, you go look at the standings, the Flames are in a playoff spot still, even after this four-game losing skid.
Yeah. So, an injury or two could change all of this and really put pressure on them. But at this point in time, listen, who's the most unpopular guy in the lineup right now? I'm giving you a bit of a loaded question. I don't want you to kind of sewer somebody who they shouldn't get sewered. But who do you think takes the most? You have a barometer that's stronger than anybody's in this city.
I can tell you based on phone calls. I can tell you based on the text line. I can tell you based on social media. It's one of two guys, and probably the guy that it would be Anthony Mantha.
There you go.
That would be the name that I think is most that takes the most heat right now amongst Flames fans. And look, I kind of get it.
That's what I was going for.
Yeah. Mantha's the guy for
you
too.
We all get it. And I only bring that up because you go out and get a center that's 27 years of age and give up a first rounder for him. Well, Connery's already said that that's not what I'm doing. A, I'm not getting a rental. B, I need someone who's 23, 25. He's going to be here for a while, especially if I'm going to pay big for him. But I wonder if you go out and spend something significant to get a guy at a time when everyone thinks you should be thinking just long term, you might be setting a guy up for failure too, kind of like Mantha was set up for failure to a degree. And I'm not – that's not a – criticism really on Conroy signing him. I didn't want them to go and sign anybody to help Huberdeau anyway. I had been on record with that all along. I thought that that's a spot that Coronado should be in from day one. And I think a lot of fans felt that way too. So that's why Mantha's taken a bit of a beating in the court of public opinion.
I think
they got to be careful with who they bring in. And I know Conroy is and will be.
Yeah, it's and I mean, I feel bad for Mantha in some ways.
No fault of his own.
I do think he was kind of it was going to go this way for a lot of people anyways. But he also, the game has fallen off since the first three games of the season, right? I mean, he got off to a great start, and I thought he was one of the real positives in that 3-for-3 start. But since then, just hasn't made the impact. Even in Utah, when he scores the goal on Wednesday, didn't really see him doing a whole lot. He's been dropped to the fourth line. You know, for a guy that came in and they were trying to get him to shoot the puck a ton, he's not really doing that. It has been a frustrating last few games if you're a fan watching Mantha. I can understand that.
Yep. And a lot of people are saying, I told you so. That's yep. What the fans are kind of – I'm sure you're hearing that on the show. But I'm not convinced that he's now on the fourth line and he's just one step out of being demoted or, you know, put on waivers and tried to demote him. I don't know if that's where it's at right now. I still think that he's got but they've been saying about that about his whole career, you know, 6'5", whatever he is, 230, like he's got all the tools, just can't seem to put them all together with any consistency. And that's what we've seen already so far this year. Some flashes of really solid play and some other times when you're like, God, I think we got to give this spot to a youngster.
Mm-hmm.
And with all those young guys pressing so hard on the farm, you know, maybe at some point we get to the point where they just say, look, this experiment was a fail. And we're going to try and put Mantha down, and we'll bring up a young kid who deserves it. I don't think we're anywhere near that point, though, because I still think they think that they can get something out of him. And I think they can, too. I think there's something there. Just need it more consistently.
I will say, Wes and I did a segment on Thursday's show, and you know, we were kind of Halloween themed, and we were kind of going scary or sweet. And I will say, the two guys that they potentially, you know, look at as guys that you could flip at the deadline. Haven't seen a lot from Kuzmenko recently. Haven't seen a lot from Mantha recently. That's one thing that you'd like to start turning so that you could get. So you can maximize the potential return
come the
trade deadline or close to it. If it were right now, you probably aren't getting the sexiest return for either of those guys.
No. And it's early, but right now I don't think there's anyone in there arguing right now we should sign these guys long term. I mean, obviously, all year long it was going to be let's wait and see what they've got,
yep.
And we'll assess the situation when we have to. It's still early, but I don't think the signs early are suggesting that that's an option. But who knows? I mean, Kuzmenko, when he's on, can really help this power play. But is it now five straight games without a power play goal?
Yep.
And they've lost four of them. And I know Huska was saying those last two games it was a work ethic issue, and their game plan just fell apart because they didn't come close to executing just the work ethic they needed. But the previous two games, he really felt that with a special teams performance that's, you know, good, either as a penalty killing unit or as a power play, those games go the other way. And I agree with them. Their special teams have not been good this
year.
Especially penalty killing, which we're not used to in this city.
Yep.
You know, all these
years. Been very good.
Backlund and Sharangovich and Coleman, when they're going, man, it's always been, what, top 5-10 in the league.
Mm-hmm.
And this year, for whatever reason, it's been abysmal. I don't know if it's just because Sharangovich hasn't been back. Maybe it's because there's trying guys like Huberdeau. I don't know.
Okay, before we let you go, Devils are in town, and when New Jersey comes to town now, that means Dougie Hamilton comes to town.
Yeah.
You just wanted to do a quick little update on what's been a real cool story you've been tracking over the last number of years.
Yeah, a gentleman in the city is very active in the community and raised a ton of money for charity and stuff. He's a Flames ambassador, Patrick Rolofsson. His daughter, at age eight, was very sick, met while in hospital, battling cancer, met Dougie Hamilton. And I've written about this a couple of times. I think it's out there. But Dougie and his brother Freddie became just chums with these two little girls, the two sisters, took them out to movies, went to the arcade, Snapchatted with them, you know, really built this beautiful relationship. Dougie says it was life-altering, just how she affected him. She died less than 2 years later, but here we are 6-7 years later. He's wearing number 7 right now. He signed that 7-year deal with Jersey. He's wearing number 7 right now because Dougie Hamilton texted the father and said, what was his favorite number? And he said 7. He said, that's the number I'm going to wear then. I think that's really cool.
That is actually
tribute
really
to
awesome.
Her. And every year he has a charity golf tournament, the T-Cup. And here in town, a small hockey tournament, you know, beer league guys. And Dougie donates a ton of signed sticks, stays in touch with the family. Today was raving about how Bryn, she's 14 now, she got her learner's permit. He knows all these things. They're going to be at the game today. There's no doubt they'll come down and see Dougie after the game. It's one thing for a guy to go in and meet a kid at a children's hospital, and that's brilliant. But it's another to kind of make a connection that both sides and both families felt so strongly about that it endures 7-8 years later after the little girl passed away. So good on Dougie Hamilton for maintaining that relationship and for it. It's genuine. It's genuine. I see it when I talk to him. He wants to bring it up, talk about her. And I think that's pretty cool. I love stories like that.
Good stuff, my man. Be well. It's good to do this in person. We should do that more often.
Great to look into your eyes and tell you that your analytics are garbage.
we don't have enough time.
Your Honor, we won't go back into that.
We'll talk to you next
See
week.
You,
thanks, Jeff. Enjoy
Cheers.
The game.
Yeah, you too.
Eric Francis is on Twitter, at Eric Francis. Catch him on Sportsnet Television and, of course, on Sportsnet.ca. The Eric Francis Hour starts to wrap up. It's brought to you, as always, by Horse Racing Alberta. Live Thoroughbred Racing is back every Saturday and Sunday at Century Downs Racetrack and Casino. Visit thehorses.com. Must be 18+. Please play responsibly.